Thanks everybody for joining our conversation about the synth backstops. I don't know if you just go direct to it and people can ask questions or what. Do you guys have any feelings on this?
Yeah, maybe just go through the post and the options and we can kind of field questions from there.
Sure. Okay. So synths are an asset that we initially use for arbitrage, for internal arbitrage, to more efficiently and effectively manage the pool price to match the market price. And they were very useful for that. We did it quite a good job of that. And we continue to do so today, which is quite nice. But we started to utilize them more and more and more, largely for savers. And by using them more and more and more, it places more risk on the protocol, and specifically the dual side LPs mostly. They're kind of the center of this in some ways. So we want to make sure that now that we've increasing the amount of liability or amount of risk on the protocol and the LPs over the last year or two, we wanted to kind of reevaluate safety measures, reevaluate how we can control runaway risk, right? And so we should be implementing some kind of synth backstop to protect the system, that in a scenario where things wind down, wind in the wrong direction very quickly, that the protocol is able to dynamically adjust itself accordingly and reduce that risk when necessary. So the two methodologies that's currently being discussed are option one, which is a forced ejection, which means that as a saver, you would, if the synth utilization grows beyond 60% due to a room price going down or the asset price going up, either direction doesn't really matter, the protocol would just do a withdrawal. And some saver would get their BTC back along with their yield, whatever yield they produce, minus whatever the swap fees are to get back your BTC on the other side. It could be a streaming swap, which to reduce all that, as it probably would be. Although I have to look at the code to verify that, but that's the first option. And it would probably be a last in, first out mentality. So the last person to add savers is the first one to get kind of get booted out or get force ejected out. And it's this way just to make it easy to evaluate who to be kicked out. It's pretty much the math is obviously very easy. But also we want to make sure we reward the longer term contributing savers in our pools. So that's the first option. The nice thing about this option is that it's probably the most user friendly, especially to savers. We probably wouldn't get very much blowback from the community or angry tweet threads or this kind of thing with this particular approach. People might be a little upset that they got ejected from savers, but all things considered, I don't think it would be too much of an issue. So that's the best thing for the protocol. For the users, probably the worst option from the protocol perspective, because ejecting savers does create some ruin cell pressure. It does reduce the depth of the pools. It does reduce trade volume of the network. So it does have a downward push on major KPIs, whereas adding savers is the inverse of that. Adding savers makes pools deeper, adds trade volume, creates buy pressure in the ruin asset. It's basically the inverse of that. So in a downward market, for example, we would likely see a bunch of savers be ejected, which would cause more sell pressure in the ruin asset, less assets in the pools, which makes sense and probably the correct thing to do in the context of a down market anyway. Option number two is what we call haircuts. And the haircut is that if you choose to withdraw your funds at that at a particular moment, you would get back a subset of your position, which could mean that you exit with less BDC or whatever than you enter with, depending upon how severe the haircut would be, and the severity of the haircut is relative to how far, like, overutilized, Synth utilized we are. If we're just a little bit over, it's barely a haircut at all. If it's a lot over, that's obviously a much bigger haircut. And so people can choose to take that exit fee if they want to, or they can just kind of wait and stay in the pools and then wait for, you know, the market to recover, or at least the room price to recover in a different market, and then get back their full collateral plus their yield, you know, and that kind of thing. And of course, this is the best for the protocol because we're not reducing the pool depths, we're not reducing trade volume, and we're not creating sell pressure in the Rune asset. And even if people do exit, they're creating less sell pressure because they're getting the haircut. So it's the best thing for the protocol, but the users might be a little bit pissy about it and kind of complain about blah, 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 and have some PR issues of people yelling on Twitter about being rugged by the protocol or something like this. So those are like the primary two options that we have to think about. People are welcome to ask questions on stage or off stage to engage in conversation debate. Any questions? Is there a chat? I think somebody's picking up some. There's a chat window somewhere. I can't remember where it is though. Oh, there it is. I found it. There it is. Any questions in the chat or on stage is welcome to ask. If anybody wants to come on stage and ask their question, they're fine. That's fine too, of course. Can we use POL instead of option two? Yes, that's a good point. So synth utilization will not grow above 60% when the POL has room to deploy, right? So imagine a hypothetical scenario where we had infinite room to deploy via the POL, then we wouldn't need this. We wouldn't need any of this stuff, theoretically, just because synth utilization would never grow to the point where we, you know, pass that 60% utilization. Obviously, we don't have infinite amount of rune. We have a limited quantity of it, so forth and so on. So that's not really a viable option. We can choose to, you know, set the amount of rune, which I think is right now it's set to 5 million or 10 million. I can't remember which one it is for the POL. Maybe Ursa might know off the top of his head. But I think it's set to 5 or 10. I can't remember which one it is. But anyways, if we set it to some number, let's just call it 10, for example, we would have a 10 million rune to deploy, and we wouldn't start seeing force ejections or haircuts until that 10 million is deployed into the various pools. If we had 20 million, if we had 30 million, if we had 200 million, like whatever that number is, like arbitrarily, we would just create more space or padding before these haircuts or these force ejections start to occur. Orion says 5 million for the POL currently. So that's another kind of option, is we can kind of like do both things. But we still need to make a selection out of these two options, in my opinion. Just we need to have something just there. And if we want to be avoidant of that backstop, we can, you know, change it from 5 million to 10 million or whatever. We can do it, as Kyle was saying, we can do an ADR to increase it to 10 million rune, so forth and so on. That's another option. You know, and you can actually do the mathematical calculations, right? So I think I actually do have a Python script that I created a while back, like 6 months ago, where you can actually look at, if you assume that the prices of Rune and Bitcoin and so forth and so on are going to decrease the same relative in the next bear market. You can look at the last bear market and see that Rune went down 6x relative to Bitcoin, went 5x relative to Ethereum, 20x relative to the dollar. So like, if you do that, you can calculate how much rune would be required to, for the POL to deploy to, you know, handle a situation okay or whatever without needing any ejections or needing any haircuts or anything like this. So that you can do that math. And I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I haven't looked at it in a long time. I think last time I looked, it was like, I think 7 million or something like this. Today, I would assume it would be more just because the pools are deeper today. They've like, you know, twice in depth, and the sensitization has probably grown with that. And that's why like stable savers, it kind of adds a lot more risk because it's 20x down. So you need a lot more rune than Bitcoin does, right? Because 20x versus 6x. Stable savers just increase the amount of like liability by a decent amount, which is what, when I started to talk about this issue, when we enabled stable savers like 7 months ago, whatever the hell the number is. So we can do an ADR talk about this. And as Pluto just said, with the original ADR, it kind of approved up to 10 million. So I guess devs can just push 10 million if we want to, just because we already had a vote on it. But that's another option in this whole kind of calculus, is like deploying more Roon via the POL, which would support the dual set LPs. And of course, the POL would take on a lot of like, would become a dual LP, right? So it's going to take on the yield, it's going to take on the IL, it's going to take on all the attributes that is an LP, which I think is okay to some extent. It's not doing it to be necessarily profit seeking. It's doing it to protect the protocol. So it doesn't really matter to me all that much if it's like turning a profit or not, and whatever time frame you want to point at. But it's more about just protecting the protocol and keeping it afloat.
Right, but the limitation of the POL is that it's finite and there isn't an unlimited amount of it. So there needs to be a secondary backstop that prevents further decay past the point where POL can deploy.
Right, we need some sort of like infinite backstop. Like, it doesn't matter if Roon goes to like one penny per token or something like this. There is something that is there that the POL is like a padding. I think somebody else in the thread was talking about like, why don't we just charge like a 2% fee on swaps and that goes to this or whatever, which is great in some sense, and that it creates more padding. But we're looking for something that's not a padding, but like a literally backs up a wall that gets hit. That's deterministically and invariably limits the risk protocol. Same thing with like when Terra was starting to collapse, and you had the LFG with like $6 billion worth of assets, like that's all padding. You can get to a place where you go beyond that $6 billion and you need much more than that, in which case, you know, it's like a bouncer, but the bouncer can get overwhelmed, right? So what you need is an infinite bouncer, one that cannot be overwhelmed. And that's this whole option one versus option two is about. I get some comments in the stage chat. So I have a couple of people advocating for option one. I haven't really voiced my own personal opinion, at least not publicly, on this matter. I'm kind of trying to not put my finger on the scale in a matter of speaking. Although I do have a personal opinion on which one's better, option A or option two, but I don't want to leave the community to make their own choices on this particular matter, because it is kind of like a tight fight. In a matter of speaking.
Yeah, did anyone want to come up and voice an opinion for a certain viewpoint? I mean, considering this, I mean, option two is definitely an infinite wall where it doesn't create the reflexivity back in the other way with Roon self-pressure. But at the same time, to me, it feels like the protocol is, it would mean that Savers is sort of insolvent in some respects. And that would be pretty bad from the user perspective. And while like it wouldn't run into an issue where people start withdrawing and then that would cause it to become further insolvent, it's kind of a self-correcting problem in that way. It doesn't, it still doesn't help any user out where, you know, they'd be for an indefinite period of time, they'd only be able to withdraw less than what they put in, less than their yield, less than their principal, which, right, you know, would feel pretty, pretty bad as someone who's like a depositor.
Right. Another way to look at option one is that it's just a natural way to scale up and scale down savers, like in a way that makes sense. And that, like, you have space because Roon's pumping because it's bull market, right? Like, Roon's generally going to outperform Bitcoin and ETH because it's bull market, and that's what generally happens. And so as Roon's pumping in price, you know, we have more space for savers to add. People add savers. Creates more buy pressure on Roon, creates more TVL, creates more volume. All these things are good things. So like, as the Roon price is kind of pumping up, we're creating more space for savers. So savers is scaling as a feature and creates more TVL and all these kind of like nice things. And then conversely, if Rune's going, you know, down because we're entering the bear market, and Rune's underperforming Bitcoin in a bear market, which we inevitably will probably have, it naturally scales down savers, you know, in the opposite direction. So we have the upside on the bull market, we have the downside of the bear market, but those two things are just naturally like scale up and scale down relative to market conditions, you know, without much concern in my mind. You would see naturally like a little more volatility or reflexivity of Rune's price, like on bull markets would push up higher and bear markets would push down, you know, lower. But that's, to me, that's okay. I'm not concerned with that.
Yeah, one thing I've been thinking about is just with integrations. I think it's going to be a difficult communication challenge for option number two, and that would reflect poorly upon the interfaces that choose to offer ThorChain savers. And right now, that's really like ThorSwap and ShapeShift. But in the future, you know, large entities start using ThorChain savers, they're gonna think twice about implementing savers, in my opinion, if we go with option two, where if, you know, if someone goes back to get their one Bitcoin collateral, not a collateral, but deposit, and they can only withdraw, you know, a third of that for an indefinite amount of time. And it's like, oh, you check back later when we're solvent and you get your collateral back.
Yep. Yeah, I think that you're right. There is communications problems with this. And with option number two, and option number two, there is no grandfather option. Like, nobody's going to be grandfathered in, and only new savers are going to be applied for this. It has to be applied to everybody. Otherwise, it doesn't really accomplish the goal that it's really trying to accomplish. It's a safety measure. You can't just like not abide by safety just because of, you know, when you added a position. That doesn't make sense. So everybody would have to be kind of informed of it. And we would, in some ways, go through the same thing we went through with like the BEP2 rune and ERC20 rune retirement towards native rune, and how we've had, you know, communications plans. We, you know, chatted on spaces and tweets and blog posts and whatever else. And then, you know, for years to come, people show up all of a sudden because they've been sleeping behind the wheel or whatever. And they're just like, I have this BEP2 rune. Like, what can I do with it? And the sad answer is there's nothing you can do with it because you didn't upgrade within a 2-year time frame or something, whatever the hell that time frame was. I think it was 2 years.
Yeah, there's one question about forced ejections. What's the impact on dual LPs? Is there any difference to dual LPs with the option one or option two, or is it net same result?
It's not, I would say it's not much of an effect on LPs. Technically speaking, you can argue that a saver withdrawing creates sell pressure on the rune asset, which causes the rune price to come down ever so slightly, which causes impermanent loss, blah, blah, blah. But that the amount is like, I mean, it depends on the size of the saver who's exited. But generally speaking, it's quite insignificant, I would say. Like an individual, that's the case. Maybe on a larger scale, like, you know, depends. Like if like 80% of the savers exit or something, are force ejected for something like this, you would see a little bit of an exaggerated and permanent loss for dual LPs. But that's much, much better than, you know, the other way around where we don't put up the backs up for LPs. If you're an LP, it's clear and obvious you'd rather have this happen than not have this. I think what's better for LPs is probably even is the haircut. If I was an LP, you might argue that that haircut's better because you don't get your capital does not get eroded, and there's no rune sell pressure or like less rune sell pressure. Again, so it's probably better for LPs in that way. But I don't consider it to be too significant, to be honest. And to Kenton's kind of point here that he's talking about in the chat, the act of doing option two, like say we just decided option two, we may see an exodus of savers. Maybe like some percentage of savers will exit because they don't like the new terms, which is, you know, rational. And so we might see a bunch of savers leave because of this, which will cause some sell pressure and cause TVL to drop a little bit. And how much? I don't really know. Who knows? Savers don't really pay that close attention anyway. So maybe they wouldn't mind so much, at least like maybe 10% wouldn't mind, if that. I'm going to guesstimate.
I mean, one of the things I was thinking about with option two is that as we get closer to the point where, you know, a haircut would be applied, it's likely that savers would start to withdraw, which would then, by savers withdrawing, that would decrease the syndicalization and bring us further away from the point. So I would think that it could be argued that by the fact of having a haircut, there is at least some type of market regulation, which already happens, by the way, with the synth yield scaling. As the synth yieldization increases, the yield to savers decreases. But this would just be a further stick to, you know, say now's the time to withdraw before there's a haircut. But being like, just to think about how many are probably just not paying attention, it probably wouldn't be like a, it wouldn't be like a full like market force of like, all right, everyone's like, all right, now's the time to withdraw because people just don't pay attention that closely. But I would think that there would be, by the act of there being some kind of, you know, forced haircut, that people would start withdrawing preemptively to, and which would then counteract the force of there being a haircut. But then it also brings us back to that. That's basically the same thing as a forced withdrawal. It's just a voluntary withdrawal at that point. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. I consider LPs and savers to both be kind of like sleepy users. I don't think they pay that close attention, to be honest with you, in general with their yield percentages or whatever or that kind of stuff. I think they're fairly sleepy. So as savers yield, you know, creeps towards zero, I don't expect that to really cause an exodus, to be honest. Probably should, and from like on paper perspective. You know, I mean, logically speaking, it would, but I think people just are sleeping and just don't pay that close attention to it. I think we already saw it happen with what some pool, I can't remember, I think it was the AVAX pool. It was like 0% yield for savers for like weeks, and it was still sitting at the cap, you know?
Yep, exactly. I think that was around like October, November. We saw AVAX utilization go way up because AVAX had a run there. And it was at least a month before there was more room because savers started to withdraw. But it took multiple weeks for, you know, some kind of reaction to happen.
Right. Yeah, people are fairly sleepy. The funny thing is, like, if you look at like Uniswap has their kind of their JIT model they have, concentrated liquidity model. And partly because of that, Uniswap V3, like the yield that LPs make on Uniswap is dog shit. And like something like 60% or 67% or whatever are at negative, are like not even making money. But yet the pools are still deep as fuck on Uniswap. It's still got billions of dollars of TVL, even though, you know, for most people, they're losing money. For the vast majority of people, they're losing money on Uniswap. But yet they still have billions of dollars of TVL. And it just kind of shows that people are fairly sleepy about the way they look about, you know, being an LP on one protocol or another. Maybe our community is a little bit more privy than their community and a little bit more kind of in touch, but it's kind of an example of that, like people aren't as reactive or as we think they should be logically on paper.
Does anyone want to come up and voice their opinion or Eridon or Ursa?
Yeah, I mean, my opinion is just like the minor points that I left at the beginning of that thread. I think the second option for haircuts is just a lot simpler from the protocol's perspective. The lack of reflexivity, I think, is really important. With the ejections, whatever pool you're ejecting from, that's going to cause the synth utilization and all other pools to absorb that rune cell pressure. And it's unclear how that plays out. Also, just the complexity of, like, you know, when you do these forced ejections, depending on the size of the saver that you select, Do you want to do the streaming swap out? And if so, as the synth utilization is going up and you're ejecting them, if the pool depth is going down, either you're streaming that swap out and that's going to get streamed over an increasing number of blocks as these are getting ejected, or you're not doing streaming, and as the pool depth contracts, users kind of get a haircut anyway if the slip fee goes up and their saver's position was large. So I just feel like the dynamics in the market will avoid the case where you have the synth utilization go over the target if we have haircuts, because the savers that are price sensitive, or rather time sensitive, will leave in advance of reaching that point. Right now, the saver yield scaling going to zero at that threshold doesn't do a whole lot, because they can just sit on it and wait for it to go positive again. But if they see a haircut coming, the time sensitive savers should, you know, hopefully react to those market conditions. And if not, then they're just agreeing to be okay with taking that haircut if they don't want to wait out to reach a point in time where it's not bad for the protocol and the haircut won't be applied. So I just see the second option is far and above the simpler and better solution. But I do realize that that I'm probably alone in that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought that the option two was the simpler one in terms of, like, from a programming perspective initially. But then as I thought about it more, I kind of reversed that viewpoint, just because if you want to do the force ejections, you just iterate over the LPs, find the one with the highest last add block height, and then inject it. So it's just a for loop, and then craft a withdraw message and send it, right? It's fairly simple. The complexity around the haircut thing is that, like, the synth utilization is a dynamic value, right? It's dynamically computed. And so you just have to add an extra thing on top of that that says the synth units cannot exceed, you know, 60% of the total units of the LPs and synths together of the pool units. So you kind of have less, like, that's the way you more or less handle it, I think. But I think there might be more, like, complexities of, like, when you actually, like, if you do it like that, what might actually happen is that nobody gets a haircut until, like, the very end. Do you know what I mean? Like everybody doesn't get a haircut until, like, your withdraw is, like, one of the last ones or something like this. Like, I think there's more complexity when you're dealing with, like, LP units and pool units and synth units and then trying to make calculations. That's actually probably, I initially thought I agreed with you, but as I looked more in the code, I thought it actually would end up being more complicated than I anticipated.
Yeah. I guess, like, the math complexity of, like, the synth unit calculations, it seems like once we get it right, it's correct, and, like, the code change is small. The complexity that concerns me is, like, when you get large saver positions that you're ejecting, are you streaming them out or are you letting them take the hit on slip? And if you're not streaming and they take the hit on slip, they're getting out less than they put in anyway, just because they're going to get hit with a massive slip fee when they're exiting. And if you're streaming them out, then, like, do you pause other ejections until that one ejection streams all the way out? And as the pool depth is contracting, you know, the duration of time that you're going to be streaming that out is increasing. I'm just concerned by the complexity in terms of the reflexivity.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's much of an issue, because first of all, yes, I think we would probably lean towards a streaming swap. It's only best for the user. And there's not a strong reason not to do that. But when you do the withdraw has already happened when you do it, right? And the streaming swap happens secondary. So the effect on the synth utilization should be more or less immediate. Although technically speaking, when you do a withdraw, you actually increase the synth utilization because you're changing the pool price when you're doing it. So you're actually increasing synth utilization until ARBs, like ARB, and then put the synth utilization to be lower than it originally started. But I have to look at the code to be sure, but I think from the top of my mind that if you do withdraw, the withdraw happens immediately, and so the effect on the synth utilization is immediate, and then it just starts to do a streaming swap to layer 1 BDC or layer 1 ETH or whatever.
isn't the synth utilization is going down at each sub swap in the stream and withdraw.
Yes, you're right. I'm not just talking about savers, we're talking about synth specifically. So yes, you are right about that.
So you could wind up queuing a bunch of streaming swaps out that are massive, and it's going to cause like a massive depth contraction because you're then not taking into account the fact that there are a bunch of pending streaming swaps that are going to lower the utilization in that pool as those synths exit over time. And as you're exiting those, the time duration on the same size is going to be increasing because of the contract.
Yeah. You may overdo it by accident.
And you also observe reflexivity via the room price decreasing because of the cell pressure and the ejections from that one pool, and that price, that room cell pressure is absorbed via increasing synth utilization in the other pools, which could then in turn trigger ejections on those pools.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it to be like a spiral out of control thing. Do you know what I mean? It might have a little bit of like an overreach, but it wouldn't be like the whole thing can unravel itself to zero.
Right, it's not self-reinforcing, but it can still certainly oversteer.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm actually kind of okay with that. It'll oversteer by like, you know, 0.25% most likely. You know,
I was just also thinking on that. If I was a user that was trying to join savers, and it's close to the cap. If I join the savers and then it's the last in first out, I'll get ejected. Then I'll try and join again. Then I'll get ejected. And if those are sleepy users, I think we just have to consider how we'd implement that with users who would join and then assume that, you know, they could just sit and forget it.
Sorry, I don't think I understood what you just said. Can you say that again, please?
So if you, with the ejection model, you said that it would be last in, first out.
Yeah.
So then what would happen is if I was trying to join the savers, I would join the savers and I would assume that my savers are in. And then if it's close to the cap, then price fluctuations might take synth utilization over the cap, and then I would get ejected. Right. And then I was just going to say, we just need to consider how much of a fit that is going to be for the users that would actually want to use savers, if they would, you know, if it would be difficult for their savers deposit to stick.
Yeah, I'm okay with that scenario, to be honest with you.
All right.
It's just because if we're already at the near the cap where light fluctuations in price are kicking people out, then we really shouldn't have entered and begin with, in a matter of speaking.
Yeah, yield would already be zero at that point, right? Like, yeah, yield is already between 5% and 0% of the total yield going to all to LPs. So you'd be making very close to zero yield, if not zero already.
It is going to be quite a pain for the users, though, because essentially, like, whatever the relative room price fluctuations are to the specific saver asset, like, you're going to stay that ratio below the target saver's capacity, because as that price fluctuates, it's just going to kick out all the recently added savers, and the net result for those users is they're just going to pay the swap fees on in and out and get almost immediately ejected.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm okay with that scenario. It's obviously not great, but I mean, UIs can be cognizant of this and say, you know, if you're within 5% points of the synth cap, we're just not going to do it a deposit, you know, or something like this.
Yeah, sure. You avoid the scenario altogether if the market responds correctly to the haircut, and just the time sensitive savers leave on their own.
Yeah, I'm just pessimistic that the market would respond to the haircut.
That's fair.
I mean, I think it will definitely. Like, there will be people who do that, but I'm assuming it's going to be a very small percentage, like maybe 1 to 5%.
Hey guys, how's it going? Just with thinking through, like, how could we build the feature out in a way where it can respond to the market dynamic better? And I was thinking, like, you know, maybe haircuts could work if there's a protocol or something on top of the Saber's feature that is able to, you know, do the appropriate reaction. You know, like, you know, there's a lot of different kind of hybrid projects that are like crypto and you know, bot based, in order to like basically move the capital in and out in a way that actually makes sense while protecting the protocol. So it's like, yeah, could we make it, could we do something like that where it's like we get the protection for the protocol we want and the user experience is better.
And so, oh, sorry, I don't think I understood how would we accomplish that.
So like, what, to Ursa's point, you know, if people, or if an entity that's making Saber's deposit decisions is operating with the kind of appropriate motivation with the time sensitive perspective, then they would you know, choose to either you know, exit or enter based on the synth capacity, and you know, typical users aren't going to do that. So is there, you know, there could be something that's built on top of the protocol that does that automatically for users. And that's advantageous to the user because it means that they don't have to babysit their position, and it's better for the protocol because it's able to leverage the haircut path in the event that it needs to. So it's just like, you know, is there more of a fuller feature set that we can build that is useful to everybody?
Are you saying there's like a second layer, like some sort of, not on the protocol, but above the protocol, like some secondary layer.
Yeah.
People and deposit the capital there, and then that automatically manages, meaning that it removes it when things get close to the haircut?
Exactly. So what I'm trying to do is get our capability to, on the one hand, I want to protect the protocol, you know, maximally, but on the other hand, you know, we want to have a feature that's, you know, user friendly. And I don't think we get that with either one or two, option one or two.
I think what you're describing is one.
Well, that's what I'm just floating that idea.
Yeah, I think what you're, it's like we're gonna do the haircut, but the haircut will never be hit because this entity exists on top of it that's just gonna auto withdraw people once before the haircut hits, which is basically what option one is, just minus the haircut, because it applies to everybody, not just the people who opt into this wrapper service that's being thrown around.
Yes, but it also gives the protocol the maximum defensive capacity with, or capability with, option two. That's just my thought process there.
Well, they're both maximally defensive. I don't find option one or option two to be more or less from each other defensive against the scenario we're trying to defend against. I think they both accomplish the task that they're trying to accomplish. This is my view. That's correct. Yeah, I think for, like, what I'm thinking is that the pain from option two, the PR pain, is an unknown kind of factor, and it may cause people to like start tweeting out that like Thorchain rugged me of my Saber's position, right? And just create this FUD and like all this kind of stuff. And that stuff, you know, permeates a lot more than lending being successful, for example. Because like bad news, people respond to bad news. It gets talked about more. It's hard to get like news articles written about when you accomplish something. It's much easier when things go wrong, especially when like funds are at risk or lost or something like this. Like it becomes like a lightning rod, and then it just kind of creates like a lack of faith or distrust in the protocol, a distrust in its operators possibly, and that's what makes me concerned about the option two, is that it has an unknown cost to it that could be fairly significant, right? Whereas in option one, all the concerns about the downward pressure of rune selling and all these things, it's like, while valid and true, it's just the inverse of the upside. So it's like having the feature being able to scale up and get all the benefits of it, and having the feature scale down and get the reverse of the benefits, the cost of it, if you want to call it that, just makes logical sense, and that it's balanced between those two points rather than trying to like create an up-only system, which naturally doesn't really occur or exist. Anyway, anybody tells me they built an up-only system, I'm going to be skeptical. I'll look at it and I'll understand it. I'll read and whatever, but I'll be skeptical. So it's like, well, option two is much better for the protocol. I'm concerned about what it might mean from a PR and trust perspective. You know, like people might say even like, oh, savers fail because of these haircuts thing. Therefore, lending also failed, and also Tor, and kind of have distrust for everything else we're trying to accomplish, right? You might have Trust Wallet get support messages from, you know, because Trust Wallet might add savers one day possibly, and like they might get support tickets from their customers, and then Trust Wallet gets pissy about it and, you know, creates problems with their integration partners because their clients or their customers are pissed off or whatever about, you know, getting a haircut or whatever. So I'm just like, it's kind of the unknown cost to option two that's hard to quantify, but it kind of scares me a little bit just because, you know, as somebody who's been a figure in the space and done a lot of interviews and whatever, and to this day, I still get, not as much as before, but I still get like questions about security and about hacks that happened, I think, what, like 3 years now, you know, since then. Like, it's still kind of like a black stain. And every once in a while, I'll see somebody on Twitter like, oh, ThorChain, isn't that one that got hacked a bunch of times? Blah, blah, blah. Like, that stuff just, it's hard to wash off, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if, I know Oleg's here, H Payne from Shapeshift, if you guys have any opinions from like the front end perspective. I think that could be valuable. Okay, I mean, what Son of Odin's saying is totally right, that we also wouldn't want that to reflect poorly upon the front ends who do savers, because really, like, they're the ones that are serving the product to the user. They're the ones that are presenting savers as a feature. So, you know, either choice reflects upon the front end that is actually presenting it to the user, and it'll have effects upon them just as much as it does on ThorChain. ThorChain will be fine either way. It's just,
right.
You know, it's really just the PR around both sides. Which, yeah, I do think that option, the force ejections option has a better PR angle around it, where it's like, we can't support this liquidity anymore, so we give it back to you. And, you know, you're basically fine minus fees, which is, you know, hugely preferable, in my opinion at least, to saying, well, check back later, maybe we'll have it, maybe we'll not.
Yeah, and it's also like it's like the opposite of Terra, right? Like, when the protocol realizes that there's like too much liability or too much risk or whatever, and it appropriately scales down, that it creates confidence, you know, in the protocol, because it's handling the situation appropriately. Whereas Terra like just infinitely went up in a certain direction and never tried to handle risk or liability, just kind of like scaled forever in one direction. And when things got sour, as they did in like May, like 9 months or 6 months, whatever hell it was before the actual collapse, they kept on kind of scaling, and they started just like, oh, we're going to create the LFG and that's going to solve all our problems kind of mentality, and we'll continue to scale infinitely. So that just creates like a distrust. But if we do the opposite and we say like, we're going to scale this thing up and we're going to scale this thing down respective of market conditions, right? I think it creates more faith and trust in the protocol because it's able to handle things appropriately.
Hey guys, can I ask a question?
Shoot.
Yeah, I was wondering, because normally I look at this problems based on my own background. I work with contracts, traditional contracts, not smart contracts most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at these things, I would think about the contracts are often implied in the way we interact with each other in daily life, even if you don't really sign a contract, really. And everyone always expects a certain degree of fairness. And that's, you can even find that in the deepest basis of the law in most of the developed countries. And when you look at it with that lens, I think it would be expected from a fairness point of view that when somebody deposited their money into Savers, there was a contract implied in that interaction, in that transaction, which has certain expectations from both sides. And we know that in crypto, things change a lot most of the time. But I do think that we should take that into account because people always expect at least the initial agreement to be honored. And so I think, I don't know what you guys think, looking at it from that way, but using that framework, I think we should try to avoid changing agreements as much as possible, and hence that the first option will be the most viable. And like you said, that also explains a little bit why there'll be number two will be a bigger PR nightmare. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a vote for option one. I think from what I'm reading in the stage from like Oleg, kind of expressing that from a UI perspective, it could be a lot of blowback and support tickets and whatnot. I'm just going to read this from Achilles. Apparently his mic is not working. He's muted right now, but mic isn't working. But I think no matter how much we try to explain that people opt in or taking a haircut to withdraw during a bad time, no one is going to listen, care when people are all sharing transactions where they're getting 100%, less than 100% out. Agree with Swing Pop on perspective. So I guess Achilles kind of like voicing about any claims about exit fees, which just people won't care and they'll just feel like they've been rugged one form or another.
So what's the next steps here? Is there going to be an ADR that is a vote, either option haircut or option forced ejection? And then a further discussion around the future of Savers, like, hey, as in, so like discussion number one, ADR number one, we're doing this first vote on the method. And then we have a further discussion later on, you know, the parameters of Savers and if we want to change certain things, like walk the Cynthia utilization down or anything else. Or is this kind of just the only step in your guys' mind, or should we have a further discussion around just the future of Savers and how we want to manage that?
Yeah, this ADR will be just option one versus option two. The community will vote, the notes will vote, and whatever one gets the most votes. I don't think in this case we require like a two-thirds majority on one side or the other. It's just whatever gets the higher quantity of votes is the one that's going to be, you know, the devs will build and we'll put it into the next release or the release after or whatever it's going to be. If people want to take on a larger communication around the future of Savers itself, we can definitely do that. We can scale back sensibilization or take sensibilization all the way down to like near zero or actually zero because trade accounts is going to remove the need for sense in general, if you do that. So that's another kind of a conversation people can have. But to me, I want the ADR to be kind of centrally focused on this one issue about a backstop and not get too dirty and debating about Savers in general. But I'm not sure if we're going to do that immediately afterwards, or I'm not sure if there's much of a draw or much of a interest from the community to like sunset savers in general.
Yeah, I do see people saying that, not to like, you know, keep bringing it up, but like I see people saying that, but is that even necessary when we have backstops in place where we have, where we can have, you know, maybe not the best of both worlds, but we have a viable savers product that has protections on both ends.
Right. Like I from just sharing my personal perspective, I've always considered savers to be the riskiest 4-5 feature by a good margin. And I've been saying that for a long time. And putting in this backstop, whichever one we choose, whether it be option one or option two, to me solves the issue of the risk of the savers. I don't mind the reflexivity up. I don't mind the reflexivity down. To me, it's not a huge deal. But obviously, like zeroing LPs, you know, to lose all of their capital is like, that's obviously a big deal. That is not very good and obviously not worth savers in general, if that's the case. But having the backstop to me solves the issue and makes me feel comfortable with savers being as a 4-5 feature in general. And it does provide significant amount of value to the protocol. I mean, we probably get, you know, twice the TVL and twice the trade volume, you know, from that feature. And we're still offering like a feature that nobody else in the industry is offering, except for maybe Maya does it as well, but like the idea of being able to get Bitcoin yield on your Bitcoin is still like a very valuable concept that doesn't really exist that much in the space. It used to on BlockFi and Celsius way back in the day. It was a shitty yield. It was like a 0.02% yield or something fucking kind of pointless. But nonetheless, it did exist. And I think like that's a very valuable thing we should keep around, especially if it's not going to have that much risk to the protocol. Kenton said if we sunset features savers now, devs won't have to waste time on implementing. I don't think I would agree with that, just because I think we need to implement no matter what. Because if we actually did choose to sunset savers right now, it wouldn't happen today. It would take probably 6 months or a year or whatever. We can tune the yield to, what we basically would do is just tune the yield to zero, which we could probably just do right now without even a code change. I think we can do Ramir alone and just turn all the savers down to zero. Theoretically we could do this, but I don't think people would exit, nor do we want to do a forced ejection of all savers, because that would just create a lot of cell pressure and ruin in a short period of time. Ideally you want to do it over 6 months or a year or something, just to kind of like pull it like taffy and just have it stretched over a long period of time. It'll have less of an effect on the protocol and Rune's price if we just do it over a year versus like in a single day. So it would be a long process. And just because it's a long process, I think it's still worthwhile putting in the backstop. Sorry, I'm trying to catch up on the chatter here. Yes, I mean, Costanza, whatever it is, it's hard to grow dual LP, especially in our particular case, just because you always have to be exposed to Rune. And while in the early days when I was working on this protocol with Lena and other kind of like OGs, we didn't really consider this problem, to be honest with you. My assumption at the time was that Rune would perform well because we're solving a significant issue of the industry of cross-chain swaps, and people would want to LP because they can get Bitcoin yield and blah, 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 blah. And I ended up being wrong with that kind of hypothesis. We didn't have a way to scale dual LPs that much before savers. The only way to scale dual LP without savers, in my opinion, is just allowing the Rune price to to go up over time, like over a long period of time. And eventually we'll hit $1 billion in TVL, and eventually we'll hit $3 billion in TVL, and eventually we'll probably hit $5 billion in TVL. If we just wait for a long enough period of time and room appreciates enough value, blah, blah, blah. I think that would probably happen over a long period of time, but obviously we want more TVL now, just because it always creates more volume, right? And if we were to like 10x our volume, our TVL right now, we would probably, you know, become close to, or maybe even surpass Uniswap in trade volume. So there's a lot of value to adding TVL, and volume, and also just better price execution, faster streaming swaps that can execute in less blocks. There's lots of value just to increase the TVL. So I don't see a strong reason to get rid of it if we are able to curve its risks, in a matter of speaking. Kenton, I'm curious, like, you can type it or you can come on, probably easier if you come on stage, but what is your, you seem very bullish on the idea of sunsetting Savers and retiring the feature. I'd be curious to understand, what is your motivation behind that? Like, why do you want to sunset it? And we're recording this, which is great, but the recording probably doesn't have the text chatter. So I'll try my best to read things as they come up. So Ken's been talking in the chat, just for the people in the recording, about sunsetting Savers and stopping new deposits and then letting people just fully exit over time. And that kind of stuff, which is probably the way to do it if we were to do it, right? Stopping deposits, reduce the yield, you know, eventually pushing it down to zero, and over time, like, you know, people will leave. I think that's the way to do it if we wanted to go at it. I'm just trying to understand what the motivation is to actually sunset once we actually properly protect against extreme scenarios.
I'll speak in favor of this one too. I think one of the points to be made is just that without Savers levering the dual LPs, it makes dual LP slightly more attractive. And I do think that one way or another, like whether it's the ejections or the backstop, like that's the first step regardless. And then the next choice to make is whether we want to reduce the cent utilization outstanding. Reduce Savers, you know, set yield to zero, don't allow Savers over a certain lower threshold, and we can slowly walk towards that potential sunset path.
That could be true. I am not sure that's true, just because people are reactive to like APRs and stuff, right? And so having the leverage thing causes a lot of like overinflated but still real yield APRs, especially in bull markets, and less true in bear markets, of course. I think the draw that we had to Savers initially, at least one of them, was its simplicity. It's funny how Kenton's coming back saying that Savers makes things more complicated, and it does from a dual LP perspective. But the cognitive like kind of load of Savers from somebody who's participating in it is so clean and so simple and so straightforward versus being a dual LP. It's really complicated. Even without Savers, it's still a complicated notion, and it's kind of, you constantly have to deal with the complexities of people, like, you know, LPing versus HODL, and their yield is this. Well, what's the yield going to be? And Kyle knows what I'm talking about, because he's been kind of dealing with a lot of this chatter on Twitter and whatnot of like, what's the yield dual LP? And like, I don't know. It's been this way for the last month or 6 months, but who the fuck knows in the future? It just kind of creates a lot of complexities and kind of like discourse in a matter of speaking. That's why like Lena has spoken a few times. I'm not sure publicly or not. I think publicly, but I'm not sure, about just kind of like firing an alternate methodology of achieving dual LPs without humans being involved, like having the protocol itself be the dual LP in a matter of speaking, and just having users be predominantly on the saver side, and then remove the kind of complaining that we see on Discord and Twitter about yields and dual LPs and permanent loss and blah, 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 and all these things.
Yeah, I can see
it's hard. It's hard to attract dual LPs. Like, even if you get rid of savers, it's still hard to attract it. It's one of the more difficult things to scale, I would say, in the protocol. I was just floating an idea, and I'll say here just for the alpha, for the fun of it. But this is not like a real thing that's going to be happening tomorrow or anything. It's just floating a kind of a crazy notion. And I was talking to Orion about it yesterday, and I was talking to Lena about it as well. Just the idea that like we create like an auto bond module, right? Which we've talked about with Monster Devs a little bit on and off. I know Urs is a big fan of the concept. And it's basically the idea that like if you want to become, you can stake your rune into the auto bond module, which is just you know, instead of being whitelisted by like a bond provider or whatever, you get auto bonded, which means a bunch of rune people just kind of like throw their rune to this auto bond module and they start earning rune on their rune yield, which is something the audience and the community's been dying for a long period of time. And then the protocol just deploys rune to be 2/3, 1/3 of the security. So security is increasing because more people are putting their rune in, you know, from 80 million to 100 million to 120 million or whatever the hell the number is. And the protocol just deploys more rune from the reserve into the POL to kind of like scale that side of the house in a matter of speaking, right? And then over time, LPs may leave because they want, you know, either Bitcoin yield, which is savers, or they want rune yield, which is this auto bond thing. So LPs may leave over time, which means that they enter on one side, the POL replaces them on the other side. And then you have like the protocol itself is basically the POL itself is like 90% of the pools or something like this. And it's very like stable liquidity. It's not like, doesn't have much flight risk, you know, because it's the protocol rather than mercenary capital. And then we kind of like solve the dual LP problem through a different methodology. Now the yield goes down from a block rewards perspective because most of the rune is in the reserve is now, you know, in the pools. But that's actually kind of okay because we've really done a great job on the protocol of having the swap fees being a significant portion of the yield of the system. So we've gotten there a lot faster than I would have guessed a few years ago, to be honest with you, of like worth like less, you know, 50% or whatever the hell the number is. I don't know off the top of my head, but like a lot of the yield of the network is just coming from the utilization. And we can get the pools to be a lot deeper, this methodology. So we'll probably even, you know, if we can double the pools by this methodology, we can also probably double the volume of swap volume and double the swap fees in this kind of thing as well. So it may actually work out. It's still just an interesting concept that I'm kind of thinking about or exploring as a methodology of a long-term solution to dual LPs and kind of giving up on the whole human aspect of dual LPs and just allowing the protocol itself to be it.
Yeah, I agree with those approaches too. I think for me, the complexity and confusion that like Kenton was speaking to is just like having both in the system where they're kind of in equal parts in the system because where the risk gets moved becomes really unclear
right.
Due to like dual LPs being a sufficient portion of the pools, but the synths having, you know, basically equivalent claim on the L1 assets.
Right.
So it makes risk modeling for the dual LP is really complex.
Yep. Yeah, I kind of agree with that mentality as well. And if we end up doing this POL kind of like thing of like POL being kind of all in, it doesn't really matter if the POL would be profitable or not. So maybe the yield of the system, none of it would go to the POL just because it doesn't give a shit about making a profit. It's just there to provide liquidity and just kind of sit there and do nothing. And then the yield would just be focused, you know, outside of the POL to the other, like the other human dual LPs and nodes in the Autobahn, you know, because you see a lot of rune get put into the Autobahn at that point, right? Because you generally see with staking systems on Atom and Cardano and whatever to be like 70%, 80%, 90%. But the negative, probably the biggest negative of this idea for people, if people want to actually think, consider it, is that, you kind of lose, you basically lose economic security at that point. it then becomes economically profitable or possible to cyber attack the network and be profitable. So you would have to kind of loosen the idealism of economic security and interest of more security, more TVL, more volume, and these other metrics. And that's the trade-off. I don't know if people feel positively about that or negatively about that, but that's the trade-off if you were to do it. Which, by the way, I think Lena has become more lax on the whole economic security idea in general. I remember Lena and I were discussing the early days and blah, 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 and debating economic security and blah, 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 these conversations. And back then, we were both pretty bullish on the idea, and we remained bullish throughout the years. But I think Lena's perspective has kind of shifted in the last year or so. And to be fair, it's not necessarily wrong, because As the value of security increases, the dollar value of the bond increases, the cost it requires to be a cyber attack increases. So it's a little bit like, you know, if you wanted to 51% attack Bitcoin within the first couple of years of Bitcoin's history, you know, very easy, very cheap. You could just do it, you know, with a couple hundred thousand dollars or whatever the number would be. You know, and it's open to a lot of people in the world who have that kind of money to launch that kind of attack. But today, Bitcoin, because it's so massive and its hash rate is so high and up there, if anybody wanted to 51% Bitcoin today, it would be extraordinarily expensive, like more money than I think any individual probably has. Even just acquiring the hardware alone would be not even viable. And so as the security increases, the odds or the likelihood of somebody being able to attack that network, it just becomes less and less and less and less. So you can make an argument that economic security is needed for the beginning, but it's less needed, you know, as the protocol scales and grows and becomes a larger kind of market cap and all this kind of stuff. And that's probably a fair argument to be made.
Also, to cyber attack the network, you need more room than there is available in the pools at the moment by at least two times the right amount of room in the pools in order to actually cyber attack the network.
You would. And you would also need a bunch of room that's in the Binance and the Binance exchange. And the act of acquiring that much room would clearly push the price. And as people push the price, the amount of room in the pools goes down, right? Because if rune's price were to automatically just double right now, just hypothetically, the quantity of rune in the pools would probably, I don't know if it would be half or not. I have to work out the math a little bit, but you would see less room in the pools. You'd see less liquidity of room in some pools as its price is pumping. So even as you start to buy from the pools and the price starts pumping, you have less to buy from. Maybe you have big whales start dumping because they're just going to take profits because room has doubled in price or 3x in price or 10x in price or whatever the hell the scenario might be. So more liquidity comes in, kind of sell pressure comes in because of that. But it does get harder and harder, right, to do it, right? But then again, to be fair, the Autobahn module, does not really contribute to security, actually. In reality, it does not. In reality, what contributes to security is people who run and operate the nodes. That's the only way to contribute to security. What we do with bond providing is not really, you know, thing, but it creates more room in the nodes, which is a positive thing, but creates a little bit of opens the door a little bit to a profitable economic attack scenario. And doing an Autobahn thing is just kind of fully opening the door, where we're at that point, we're just don't really care so much anymore about this topic and that kind of thing, you know what I mean? So we're counting all this security as part of security, but from a logic perspective, it's not really contributing security. Instead, we're just using that as a mechanism to kind of grow the pools using the rune in the reserve, which again is really viable, right? Growing the pools is good. High TVL is good. High price execution is lower price execution is or better price execution is better. More volume is better, right? So, you know, we can become, we can surpass PancakeSwap in volume just by doing this, possibly. I have to look at the actual numbers, but I'm guessing we can get at least fairly close just by launching this, by kind of relaxing our viewpoints on economic security and optimizing for more volume, more TVL, you know, more security, blah, 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 and push these numbers up.
Any final thoughts?
Well, I don't know. I think I've said everything I need to say. I don't know if anybody else on the stage has any final thoughts or anybody in the chat. But we'll probably put the ADR out either tomorrow or maybe Monday, depending upon some things. And nodes will just start voting for option A or option one or option two. And we'll see after 1 week, I guess. We'll give them 1 week to make the votes. And whichever one has the higher quantity of votes will probably be the winner. I'm just reading the chat, catching up. All right, I think that's it. Anybody else? Kat? Ursa?
I think we're good. I'll upload the recording to the RSS feed.
All right. Thanks, everybody, joining. See you all. Talk to you all. See you all in our Twitter space. Are we doing Twitter space today, I think, Kyle? At 4:30, right?
Yeah, if you still want to do it, I'm down.
Yeah, I'm still down to do it. 4:30. I'll see everybody on Twitter at 4:30. We'll do a Twitter space. We probably won't talk about this issue that much just because this is like kind of an internal conversation, which is why we're doing it here in an internal like Discord. When I'm trying to make decisions about the protocol, it's probably best to do it internally rather than having public conversations on Twitter. But we might mention it or whatever, but we're probably not going to go much detail. Right, Kyle?
Sounds good. All right, see ya.
Yep. All right. Later, everybody.